Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club meeting. We're still covering the chapter 15, Justifiable Homicide. And last week, we left off on page 185. Hello, Jalavet.
Hello.
Amin's in the studio.
Yes, he is.
How's it going?
Hey, what's up? All right.
What's up, bro?
What's up? We're on page 185, you know what I mean?
You know what I'm saying?
That's right. We occupying the library up in this.
See how you just turn everything so good.
That's what I'm saying. This show normally is serious.
That's right.
It is. Who else we have joining us tonight?
We have a couple of other people. We have some guests that are in the chat room. Hello, everyone. But no one, I don't think, at this juncture is prepared to contribute right now. So it's just the regular crew.
Anybody who's read this book, read this chapter, reviewed it, please raise your hand anytime. And anyone else has any questions, we'll open the forum for questions throughout the evening, the meeting rather. Okay, last week we left off where Dr. Wellesley was explaining that all black people everywhere need to understand why we're witnessing black people being murdered by white males in uniform who are authorized to carry deadly force, and why we'll soon escalate to more than one fatality a day. So that was where we left off, and this week we'll pick up where she gives us some more insights as to what we must do. Here it is. This is the fourth paragraph on page 185. She says, "Furthermore, black people everywhere must begin to understand why the black collective and black males in particular have been under intensive attack for the past 2,000 years. Indeed, Jesus was a black male who was lynched by uniformed white male Roman soldiers 2,000 years ago as a result of the same war that has continued into the present day, extension of the same Roman white empire."
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to, exactly what she's saying, none of us to be able to turn this thing around. We must collectively, quote unquote, get it. We must get it. We must understand that these people are organized. They have an organized system of oppression. And they impart their values into segments of our society. She didn't go into that, but I will. And to maintain the oppression from outside, that's the police, and from within, that is those are the the underseers. You had an overseer on the plantation. You had an overseer. The overseer was white, and the underseer was black. He was like an assistant manager, assistant supervisor. Okay. Well, please put the phone on mute, please. We can.
Okay, I will.
Okay. And so the people who are members of the African community, they maintain our subservience by giving us improper instruction, giving us bad advice, you know, in order to help us, keep us oriented from making the proper decisions, and from, or when we do make the proper decision, to make our plans not work properly. So we have to grasp this by study, reading texts like this, reading historical books, so we can know what has been done to keep us disenfranchised and alienated and marginalized, and so we can prevent that from being as effective as it has been in the future. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that?
One of the things I guess I wanted to say, you're live. One of the things that I wanted to say is it's interesting that this chapter was written, a couple decades ago. And these issues have progressively worse. So I'm curious, I guess, to try and understand from the black male perspective, perhaps you or Brother Ming can assist me with this. Can you articulate the amount of pressure and stress that the black man must endure under these types of conditions that have been so pervasive for so long and almost perfected, I think, the terrorism? How do you deal with that?
For me, it's hard to... I try to recognize what's going on and try to look at ways to deal with it. We were talking earlier about the when you really look at it, how little power we have. We try to pretend we have quite a bit of power, but it's all around us. There's that pressure, constant pressure, the constant reminder that that we could be killed at any time. I'm actually outdoors now. Police car comes around a second time, third time, you know. And I have to recognize at all times that I could be a victim of this, these attacks that are justified, you know, by the system.
Correct.
Yeah. That's... And our community really likes to avoid the term oppression. We like to say, we just talk about it as police brutality. It's more than brutality. The brutality is woven into the fabric of this society. Everything is brutal. Everything is violence against us. Education is violence. The spirituality is violence. There's nothing not used to attack us in every way imaginable, which is the reason why we're still in this condition. And until we acknowledge that you are an oppressed person, you feel oppression all the time, and we try to deny what we feel, and that's the main problem why we floss. We're trying to escape from admitting, because when we feel like we have a Cadillac and a nice house, then we're no longer oppressed, because those were considered symbols of Mr. Charlie or Master's freedom and wealth. And we believe we have that symbol, then we have freedom and wealth, which is why we were attacked when we bought a nice car or something. And maybe we still are in some occasions, but we still don't realize that. Even we're attacked by the police, and it's justified that you would think that those guys would be like, well, I bought this car, I thought I bought my freedom, but evidently that didn't work. but they still try it again. That's the part that beats me. They don't say, oh, can't I just go back to the drawing board? I probably should try another strategy. No, they keep trying that same one over and over again. Because I think we covered that in another chapter where we talked about the circular thought pattern to avoid confrontation of the problem, thereby avoiding the solution. And so, which is back to cowardice. So
I've been stopped before and they asked me, is this your car? Buying a new car doesn't help any.
I know that's right. I'd be like, I hope it ain't.
It's another reason to be stopped.
I'm
going
to tell you, no? Is it my boss's car? Is that the right answer?
Got to answer the question. No. No, what I was getting, I think, more toward was, I guess, more about this justifiable homicide and how these types of feelings or being under that type of constant oppression and tyranny by a regime that has, you know, an age-old vendetta with you, the black man. How are some of those things translated into the decisions that we make right now? And I guess kind of a throwback to the black fear that we talked about, you know, before. How does that play into just your everyday existence? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think I see what you mean. And you know, you end up playing a game. I had to stop and think before that even my demeanor changes depending on my environment. You see this all the time. I'm in a neighborhood now where people just walk around and do whatever they want to. But when you go to their neighborhood, you can see where people automatically straighten up. And there's these changes in your demeanor depending on where you're at. You go to work, your demeanor changes. You go into a majority white neighborhood, you begin to turn into something more non-threatening.
Right.
And you use these things to ensure your own safety.
Right, but these are our men. This is our pillar. These are our protectors. And so if you then have our protectors, our strength brought low and impotent before us, then I'm wondering, you know, what's the way? What's the straight way? What's the way to regain our power short of, you know, blowing smoke in our own face and just proclaiming that we are powerful and gods and, you know, our melanin is our magic and all that, making these proclamations without practical application? How do we harness that real strength?
I think we need to figure out what the weaknesses are and start working on those weaknesses. I just fed a meal to my family today, and and I had no control over where that food came from. I had no control where the meat came from, the vegetables. If I wasn't given that food, if it didn't come through Mr. Charlie, my family wasn't going to eat tonight.
Right.
So if I recognize that, then I may make a decision to start growing my own food.
Right.
Because I need to gain back control over feeding my family.
Right.
And we need to do that with all eight areas of human existence that Welting talks about.
Right. All right. That's right. You got to do it. Get that control back. Here we go. Bottom of page 185. Let's see. She says here, very interesting about how they like to kill us all the time. Whenever there is a sense of increased vulnerability within the local and or global white collective, as, for example, caused by inflation. We're going through that right now, currency devaluation, unemployment, loss of a war or counter struggle by non-white people. There you go. The invasion of the Middle East or African frontier. That's what I call it. They know they're not as successful as they hoped to be in those struggles. And for example, Arabs control limited oil supply. Yeah, Iran taking high. We still stay getting to the same people. She says black guerrillas struggling in southern Africa and the loss of the Vietnam War. Right. Well, still getting went out of Vietnam right now. But there will be an increase in the ever-present normal daily slaughter and murder of black and other non-white males by legally authorized to do so. And it's interesting. She said, this murder and slaughter will be logically viewed as justifiable within this specific logic framework of the fear of white genetic annihilation. Now, that's interesting. We just had a guy with this, we had a brother who was a run over in some city. I don't know if it was Mississippi. And I don't know if they're just reporting it more or what, but we do see an increase of police violence and white civilian violence since these wars have escalated since 2003. And we're hearing it on the news, I would think, more regularly. And we're finding stuff that they're not even putting on the news. So the point is, she's right, as ever, that they are in tune with their domination. And I've been recently following the Dalits or the Sutras in India and the oppression that they've been enduring for the last 2,000 years, except for they've had it, I'm going to say, more concentrated and intense than we have, because, you know, that region was just overrun by the Hellenes or the Greeks, and they just hurry up, instituted their culture, hegemony, and then it took them about, well, maybe 600 years, and then they put it into the spirituality and developed a caste system, what they call the Varanas, And the oppression of our people, our relatives, black relatives, is so intense. And you can look at that and see that's what black people are going to be if, you know, we don't liberate ourselves. You look at some of the things that they have going on. You know, we've had the struggle going on, but in different pockets. But we've been brought into it within the last 500. They've been in it 2,000 years strong. So, if you're looking at the Dravidians or the Dalits in India, is an indication of where the black man in the West is likely to be if he don't get this iron weight off his back. That should be some inspiration for us to start changing our behaviors. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
I was thinking about when you see the people over there, it's almost just about acceptable. Dead caste system.
Yeah.
You know, here you have these pockets of resistance, but over there it appears to be very little resistance at all to that type of thing. But we're headed
right
that way. We see people apologizing for their own oppression at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, one thing I noticed, I wish some psychologists would look at it, because what's so ironic, if you look at their deities, they're white. That these call themselves Aryans, but they're just almost as dark as the people they're oppressing. But the deities that they're worshiping are white. And I maintain that when Alexander came to India and I read about that some years ago, and how they instituted his generals, created the new aristocracy, and they made sure that the spirituality reflected the racism and white supremacy that the Greeks had brought from Europe. And when you look at the people, you see these dark gurus and swamis and they got the paint on the forehead and they worshiping a white deity, you can come right over here and you can look at the same black bourgeoisie worshiping white Jesus and talking about the black low-life scum, you know, except for they've only been doing it for maybe a couple hundred years, and those people have been doing that thing for 1,000, 2,000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can see how much stronger they will get if they were allowed to persist, and then they re-spiritualize, because one thing has benefited us, we have become literate. Whereas the Dalits have become illiterate. They used to be literate, and they have been made illiterate. And then they, you know, literacy isn't really, not only that, they're not allowed to educate themselves intentionally. And they're being divided by having lots of different languages in different areas to keep them from being able to communicate effectively. So, you know, we have a strong advantage that we do speak common language. We do have access to education. And we should use this for our own liberation. And there are resistance movements over there. There are people who they're trying to get rid of the castles, but they don't. They're still trying to overcome the same brainwashing that we complain about over here. Because they had it just as intense, you know, with the chains and the torture and all of that. And so they've been, you know, let loose enough because of the programming is been built in really well. But they're struggling to regain their soul, too. But they're just, you know, they've been in it longer, you know. And we have some advantages that we understand that the white man is not God to a certain extent, to me collectively. They don't know that as well as we do. So, and hopefully they'll come out, you know, more strongly and be able to bring more of their people into recognition of their ancient past and ancient glory, and then flip the script on a whole social order, which is what's necessary over there and for black folks everywhere, in order to get our dignity and our life and our souls back. Anybody got anything to say about that?
I agree. and I guess they have to the difficulty with all of us, I guess, is continuing to try to change the situation using rules that aren't ours. You know, the homicide is already justified, the criminalization is already created, but by rules that belong to somebody else, and we need to go back to right and wrong, and not rules created by somebody else for their own benefit.
Right, right. Stop playing by the enemy's rules, because the rules are there and are no rules other than the rules you want. That's a new way of doing it, man. That's the only way. And she has another instrument here, right? She says, second paragraph, page 186, for those following along in the text. She says, because black males of all non-white males have the greatest potential to genetically annihilate the white collective, black males will experience the greatest ferocity of white supremacist attack through justifiable homicide. Because black males and other non-white males have the potential to produce white genetic annihilation through the use of their genitalia, and because genetic annihilation is the most fundamental fear of the white global collective, this collective, consciously or unconsciously, evolved a counter weapon or system of weapons that theoretically could achieve non-white genetic annihilation. And I think we know what those weapons are. Anybody's familiar with this book, and that is the firearm with the long black barrel, symbolic of the shaft of the penis, which is there. Equalizer, as I think she speaks of it in another chapter in this book, and they consider that to be the factor that makes them equivalent to the black man. So they shoot us with the gun, and I guess they, you know, it's insane. It doesn't really make much sense to a person who isn't paranoid and neurotic in many ways. But this is what's going on in their mind. You know, you want to know why they're doing these things, why they're treating you like that. You know, they're envious of your ability to produce blackness. And this, they can't make it on their own. They want to just, they just want to knock you off and make sure they can have the best chance at living and having and enjoying the resources on this planet. Anybody else have any ideas to share? Okay.
Now, okay, all right. You have 4 minutes. You can hit your final thoughts.
Okay. The can we go in overtime?
If you would like to, sure.
But just yeah, because I just got. I might not even need it because I just got one little short spot right here. She says, by using the gun against the helpless animals, they attempt to achieve a sense of manhood and security. And this is in regard to the hunting sport, in addition to just normal hunting. You know, they like to just kill animals for their love of killing. And
people
she says
too.
They have a fleet, huh?
I just had visions of niggerhead in my brain.
Oh yeah, they ranch, right.
Well, hunt people too. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
They do. She says a fleeting sense of manhood can be achieved by the white male sports hunter because in killing the large black or brown animal, there has been a symbolic destruction of the major threat to white genetic survival. She says non-white males may say they also hunt and enjoy hunting, but obviously hunting does not carry the same unconscious meaning for the non-white male as it does for the white male in the context of the global white supremacy. There you go. That's the last part. We'll be able to wrap this up, hopefully, in our next meeting. And we won't need overtime.
Okay.
All right. That's been... How much time we got left?
2 minutes. 45
Okay, we won't use all the 2 minutes. Well, that'll be all for the night, this evening's, this week's meeting of the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club. Chapter 15, the Ice Papers and Justifiable Homicide. We'll conclude this chapter next week, and you join us again. Shalom, peace.
Peace.